Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, from Paul Barrett, from the publisher's desk, changing how we deliver Monday's newspaper. A year ago, we brought back the Monday printed newspaper to offset the combining of our Sunday and Saturday editions. The latter part of that experiment has been successful. Our weekend editions have had, in some cases, 20% more pages, and our advertisers like the extended shelf life. Many readers have told us they love longer features and more time to read them. The Monday part of that experiment, however, has not gone well. Advertisers are not attracted to that day of the week to drive sales to their businesses, preferring to place ads from Tuesday through the weekend. Monday has also been our weakest day for single copy sales. We knew this was a risk, but one we were willing to try in hopes that readers would respond. For many years, newspapers, including ours, have known that Monday was the most challenging day of the week, both in readership and advertising revenue. That's why it was canceled when we took over 5 years ago. It was one of many successful efforts to pull this paper into the black after several years of losses, which forced the former owners to file bankruptcy. Unlike many newspaper companies around the world, we still feel strongly about the feel of the printed word, and we work hard to find ways to overcome the obstacles that have caused thousands of papers to abandon their print editions altogether. At the same time, we have dramatically grown our digital subscriptions, sometimes as much as 200% in year-over-year revenue. We are also committed to survival. We know the community is so much better off with the News Gazette in all of its iterations as a part of the fabric of our lives. There are dozens of stories corroborating the fact that when newspapers go away in a community, corruption and misinformation run rampant, primarily because their citizens have no idea what's going on with city councils, school boards, county boards, etc. There are numerous incidents. I saw one recently on 60 Minutes, where shortly after the town newspaper folded, city managers gave themselves astronomical raises, knowing the watchdog was gone. And it's not just oversight that makes local newspapers the glue that holds a community together. We win dozens of awards annually, both state and national, and unlike most newspapers that are run by investor chains, our content is 90% local. We have the largest newsroom in Illinois, south of Chicago. But we are not a public utility. We are a private company, just like your neighborhood furniture store, the hardware store down the street, and the small business that specializes in roofs and gutters. We must be viable to stay alive. Every newspaper we build from scratch. Not one thing in today's paper is the same as the day before. It takes time. It takes talent and it takes commitment. It also involves a business community that knows how important a newspaper is to the fabric of a community. On my daughter's wedding day, a friend said to me, "You're not losing a daughter, you're gaining a son." He was absolutely right. Starting next week, we are changing the way our subscribers receive our Monday edition, transitioning from print to a strictly electronic edition. You will still be able to flip through news, sports, and comics, but on your device. Before the sun rises, rather than having to wait until that day's mail arrives. And in some instances, even earlier. For example, we'll now have the ability to rush out an e-edition, after a big Illinois football win on Saturday, packaged just the way you saw it in print last fall. We have thousands of print edition readers that are also subscribers, and we hope this will encourage them, or others, to get their Monday news online. It's a great bargain. With your regular print subscription, you can tack on a digital full access subscription for only $2 more a month. Yes, $2 a month. Our 1 year reprisal of the Monday print edition failed to be supported by our readers as well as our advertisers, so both. And with the looming costs associated with recent tariffs on newsprint, publishing one less day a week can help us, at least for a time, hold back rate increases. President Trump's 25% tariff on newsprint is already wreaking havoc on an industry struggling to be viable. That's a 25% tariff on newsprint. Sometimes staying relevant and viable means making tough decisions, ones those with lesser commitment are not willing to make. We are committed, as are almost 23,000 subscribers, which gives us over 50,000 daily readers and over 1,000 advertisers who believe a local newspaper is important. To those who do, thank you. Signed, Paul Barrett, P-A-R-R-E-T-T. He is COO, Chief Operating Officer of Central Illinois Multimedia Group and publisher of the News Gazette. He can be reached at pmbpub@aol.com. Next up, a large, colorful photograph front and center on the front page of the paper. Farm Leader Celebration, Leading the Way. And there's two photographs. I'm sorry, there's a smaller one as well. The larger one is of indoors. It looks like she's in a room full of people smiling. The caption reads, with friends and family looking on, Olivia Shike, S-H-I-K-E, is introduced as the News Gazette's first emerging farm leader of the year at Monday's celebration at Riggs Beer Company in Urbana. The 18-year-old Unity High graduate and current college freshman was honored alongside Farm Leader of the Year Larry Dallas of rural Tuscola. There's also a photo of Larry Dallas talking to someone. You see someone else's back of their head, but then you see him as well. And Jack Larson took these photos for the News Gazette. Congratulations to them. And at newsgazette.com, you can check out Communities editor Dave Hinton's profiles of Monday's honorees. The next headline reads, Hirschfeld estate trial begins years after death. That's Hirschfeld, H-I-R-S-C-H-F-E-L-D, Hirschfeld. Estate trial begins years after death, Champaign County Court. This article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Urbana. More than a decade after his death, the children of politician and former News Gazette president John Hirschfeld are continuing to contest decisions made in his will. The seven children filed their suit years ago, but Associate Judge Gary Weber dismissed it in 2022 due to his interpretation of precedent set in regard to power of attorney. In 2023, the appellate court ruled that interpretation to be incorrect and reversed the dismissal. On Monday, the trial began for the case in which the Hirschfeld children allege their father's second wife, Mary Hirschfeld, took advantage of her husband's declining health to divert assets intended for them for her own personal use. The Hirschfeld children, Laura Hollis, John Hirschfeld, Christopher Hirschfeld, Jennifer Ryan, Adam Hirschfeld, Catherine Murphy, and Robert Hirschfeld, claim in their suit that at the time of their father's divorce from mother Rita Hirschfeld Henneman in 1998, his estate was worth $2.6 million, and he had shared information with them about an income he had of $120,000 a year for his lifetime. In the weeks after his death, Mary Hirschfeld represented the total value of his estate at $226,000. The lawsuit also alleges $1.8 million in income was, quote-unquote, missing. It also alleges Mary Hirschfeld exploited her husband's dependence, threatened to leave him to get her way regarding his estate, and even banned his children from seeing him outside of her presence. She returned that accusation in the final minutes of Monday's proceedings, claiming that on Christmas Day in 2006, Laura Hollis called John and threatened to prevent him from seeing his children or grandchildren unless he turned over a property he owned. Mary did not hear this alleged call herself, but was in the room when it ended. His face was white, she said. That was months before a quadruple bypass, which marked the beginning of his decline in health and increased reliance on caretakers. Mary said that John's children had essentially no involvement in his care outside of an isolated incident when Hollis took care of him for a few hours while Mary dealt with her own medical incident. Much of her testimony regarded a period beginning in 2010 through John's death on November 30, 2014, during which he needed a high level of care. Mary described feeding him, bathing him, changing his diaper about 8 times a day, and providing his medicine. She also hired caretakers for him during the day, but some parts of her testimony were unclear as to the division of labor. Mary described feeding him 3 meals a day, but also spoke of several instances when a hired caretaker was feeding him as she did something else. Mary said she had little time to herself, but that she did golf once or twice a week. One allegation in the lawsuit against her claimed she did not spend very much time with him, which she said evolved from a conversation she'd had with one of those caretakers. Mary was apparently returning from home from a golf outing and learned the caretaker had been feeding John for a very long time. She was surprised to learn this, as she typically spent about 30 minutes feeding him at mealtimes and provided snacks the rest of the day. Mary also claimed that many of the renovations completed on the house. Had been discussed with and approved by John while he was lucid, and that many of them were completed with the goal of increasing accessibility and safety for him. She also said he approved of the sale of a vehicle he owned to swap it out for a Mercedes-Benz truck that was easier for her to transport him and his wheelchair in. Mary also testified that there was evidence John was more lucid in his final years than he appeared, such as a reply letter from Carle Foundation Hospital following up to an inquiry she did not make. John enjoyed sitting at his desk from time to time rather than just in recliner watching TV, Mary said, and could have made the inquiry online while she believed he was just playing solitaire. The bench trial is set to continue as long as a week, after which Champaign County Judge Chad Beckett will make a decision about the Hirschfeld Children's lawsuit. As a quick note, Ebertfest passes on sale. Festival passes and individual tickets are on sale at thevirginia.org, thevirginia.org. Ebertfest will be taking place between April 23rd and 26th, 2025 at the Virginia Theater, sponsored by the University of Illinois College of Media and Chaz Ebert. Next up, from Bob Asmussen, teachers' work can be found all over by design. This piece is based out of Champaign. While John Odum, O-D-U-M, attended Carrier Mills High School, 3 hours southwest of Champaign-Urbana, the district dropped the art program after his freshman year. But when Odum was a senior, the district allowed him to attend an art class at nearby Harrisburg High School. That's where Odum met Barbara Allen, who became his painting instructor. All these years later, they stay in contact. "She was definitely my inspiration to become an art teacher," Odum said. "She was an amazing teacher." That's been a good thing for the students in Champaign's Unit 4 school district, where Odum has taught for 27 years. "I knew early on I wanted to be an art teacher," Odum said. In 2021, he was honored as the Illinois Elementary Art Teacher of the Year. Odum currently works at Carrie Busey Elementary in Champaign. And it's a great thing for the folks who attend this weekend's Boneyard Arts Festival, spread across 90 venues in the area. Odum's piece, titled Fusion, was selected as the signature image for this year's festival. You will see Fusion everywhere this weekend, on billboards in the community, web banners, and on all the signage associated with the event, which is in its 23rd year. "Monday, I saw my work on a billboard," Odum said. "That was pretty surreal." A signature image has been selected every year for 15 plus years, said 40 North Executive Director Kelly White, who runs the festival with Elsie Hedgepeth, Director of Operations and Outreach. They realized it would be nice to highlight a specific artist every year, so it's become part of the tradition, White said. Odom's piece was selected from more than 100 images submitted by local artists. They were evaluated by a panel of local professionals, art professionals. What made Odom's work stand out? It's an unusual medium because it's origami. It's folded paper, White said. We have featured all different types of medium, and we never have featured origami. A nice component of that it has a 3D element. Also, what the jury was really impacted by was the colors. It was very vibrant. We're highlighting a spring arts festival. You want it to feel celebratory. Get people excited about going to see some really beautiful things. It fit the bill perfectly. The background is red, with the papers including purples and blues. It's just beautifully done, White said. Odom used marbled paper created by artist Andrew Preston of Louisville, Kentucky. It is sold at Urbana's Art Mart, or Art Coop, COOP. It was kind of a collaborative project, Odom said. How long did it take to create? I probably spent a week on it, Odom said. Evenings and weekends, remember, he's a full-time teacher. Regular participant. Odom is a big fan of 40 North. Since 40 North first started, I've been involved with them, Odom said, for over 20 years. They do so much with two people. He worked with 40 North during a family arts night, even at Robeson Elementary. He said he has submitted entries to the signature image contest the past 4 years, and he doesn't expect to get picked again in the future. I think they like to mix it up, Odom said. I certainly will be participating by showing my work at some venue. Odom, this is O-D-U-M, will be part of the festival with his work on display at two locations, with the Craft League of Champaign-Urbana at the Orpheum, and with another group of 10 artists in downtown Urbana, 115 West Main Street. The Boneyard Arts Festival started small back in the day, got nicked by the COVID-19 pandemic, but is now back to full attendance. CU supports the arts in general and the festival in particular, White said. Art lovers know there's a lot of stuff happening that only happens this weekend, White said. Pop-up galleries, collaborations that are happening, specific performances. It has that excitement. It's also U of I Moms Day weekend, and we try to let all the moms know. The festival takes months of planning. They will begin working on the 2026 edition soon enough. The artist community is strong in CU, Odom said. It's amazing. It's an amazing network, he said. There are so many incredible artists in our community. But one thing I think our community lacks is a community arts center, Odom said. A lot of communities our size have a community arts center with programming for kids. I have families asking all the time, where can our kids take classes and things? And we just don't have a facility. Origin story. Odom's work is almost always with paper folding or oil painting. Odom, who turns 50 this summer, earned his undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of Illinois in art education. Besides his teacher at Harrisburg, other influences for Odom were provided by Julia Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, at Southeastern Illinois College, and Jenny Southland at the U of I. Odom has lived in Champaign since 1996, almost a townie. The father of two adult daughters, Odom lives in Champaign with his partner, U of I College of Education professor Scott Filkins. To see more of Odom's work, go to johnodomart.com. That's johnodomart.com. And, excuse me, there's a photograph of his work, Fusion, that got picked as the piece to represent the Boneyard Arts Festival. And it's just a very pretty picture of red, kind of origami, folded and then just kind of displayed in a nice photo. The caption for that photo reads, "Artist John Odom's entry, Fusion, was selected as the signature image for this year's Boneyard Arts Festival." And there's a picture of Odom, and both of those are provided. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. Or Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. That's his email address, Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, from top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. It hit home for Zoe Lindgren, L-I-N-D-G-R-E-N. It hit home for Zoe Lindgren when the Champaign Central senior attended the Eric Show's opening night festivities, last month at the Illini Union Art Gallery. That's the Illini Union Art Gallery. It felt really awesome to see the Best in Show label next to my piece, Lindgren said. I felt incredibly honored. It was really cool to be recognized. Lindgren's piece, Thoughts in Flight, took 20 hours to complete. Using color pencils, she drew blue jays hovering over friend Isabella Hernandez to represent constant thoughts of everything going on in the world, she said. It will remain on display until mid-April, along with artwork from other talented high schoolers. You can visit newsgazette.com for more Eric Show winners. Daughter of Samantha and Rob, R-O-B-B, Lindgren, Zoe has been drawing since her days at Southside Elementary. She credits art teachers at Central, including Carol Lynn Comparetto and Shane Rodoms, for getting me started in doing realism, but not traditional realism, she said. Zoe will pursue art and biology in college. She's considering Iowa and Wisconsin for a career in medical illustration. Thoughts in Flight also will be displayed at Central's annual art show, which opens May 1st. The Eric Show is a juried high school art show established in 2010 by 40 North, along with Dale and Peg Stephenson, in memory of Dale's son Eric, 1951. He lived from 1951 to 1970. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email Jim Rosso, J-I-M, last name Rosso, R-O-S-S-O-W, at jrosso@newsgazette.com. And there's a photo which is provided of Zoe standing in front of her artwork. So congratulations to her. Next up, history. Area history. In 1925, a very secretive arrangement was made a week ago for the more prominent men and women or two to travel about the state, dropping literature from an airplane to advertise the University of Illinois. With great care and secrecy, plans were made and the persons to take the trip were chosen. The day arrived, today, and the chosen few assembled and a picture was taken. All was ready except the plane. The instigator of the affair clambered to his car, waved goodbye, and chirped, "April Fool." In 1975, Thomas E. Lockwood, age 33, assistant professor of botany and director of the University of Illinois Herbarium, was killed and five students were injured after 19 miles northwest of Musquez, Mexico, when a university carryall overturned during an environmental field trip. In 2010, the $250 million sale of Carle Clinic to not-for-profit Carle Foundation Hospital was finalized, and clinic buildings were set to open their doors under a new name, Carle Physician Group. That was 2010. And in international history, today's highlight, on April 1st, 1945, American forces launched the amphibious invasion of Okinawa during World War II. U.S. forces succeeded in capturing the Japanese island on June 22nd after a battle in which more than 240,000 people died, including as many as 150,000 Okinawan civilians. Also on this date, in 1924, Adolf Hitler was sentenced to 5 years in prison for his role in the Beer Hall Putsch in Munich. Hitler would serve just 9 months of his 5 year sentence, during which time he completed the first volume of Mein Kampf. In 1946, a magnitude 8.6 earthquake centered near Alaska's Aleutian Islands triggered a tsunami that pounded the Hawaiian Islands with waves up to 55 feet tall, killing 159 people. That was 1946. The next headline reads, actually, it's a look at our weather forecast for today and the next few days. Today, 54 degrees, sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy. East winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy. Southeast winds, 15 to 20 miles per hour. Gusts of up to 35 miles per hour. It's been quite windy lately. For tomorrow, warmer, but rain. The high will be 72, the low is 48. Rain likely with a chance of thunderstorms. South winds 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Overnight, rain likely. Thursday, the high will be 61, the low will be 49. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of rain. Friday, the high will be 61, the low is 45. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of rain. And Saturday, a little cooler, the high will be 54, the low is 45. Again, a chance of rain in the morning, then rain 70% likely in the afternoon. So lots of rain this week. I'm getting my grass seed out and just getting ready for spring planting. So let's use all this rain to our advantage. Next up, North Prospect Development. Ex-Fazoli's making way for Crew Car Wash. This article is written by Jana, J-A-N-A, Wiersema, W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A. The article is based out of Champaign. A fast food restaurant that closed last spring is being demolished to make way for a car wash. A demolition permit has been issued for the former Fazoli's, that's F-A-Z-O-L-I, Fazoli's building at 2029 North Prospect Avenue in Champaign, with Crew, C-R-E-W, Car Wash, one word, listed as the new property owner. The company, which bought the property through an LLC for $3 million per county records, has submitted a development application to build an approximately 4,700-square-foot car wash and 345-square-foot building at the site. Crew boasts over 50 locations in the Midwest and hires approximately 20 full-time and part-time positions at each new location, according to its website. The chain currently has no locations in downstate Illinois. And there's a photograph of a building and there's a bulldozer outside of it. The caption reads, "The former Fazoli's building at 2029 North Prospect Avenue, Champaign, is being torn down to make way for a Crew car wash." That image is provided by Jana Wiersema for the News Gazette. And as a quick follow-up, this story contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you're not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. And as a quick reminder about the local offices, the News Gazette is a daily newspaper operated by Central Illinois Multimedia Group, and the office is located at 2101 Fox Drive, Champaign, Illinois. 217-351-5252 is the phone number to connect to the offices. 217-351-5252. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back to read part two with you shortly. Have a wonderful day.